You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, it's the Friday News Roundup. Interest rates go up again. Fed Chair Jay Powell says we might be ready for another bump in the fall. Also, Senator Joe Manchin supports a new energy and health care bill, and revelations from the January 6th committee keep on coming. Today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, the statewide races in Wisconsin's August 9th primary election have had a flurry of updates in recent days. The Democratic Senate primary looks all but settled after three of the top candidates dropped out, and the Republican primary for governor has seen some major endorsements and spending in the lead up to next month's vote. We're catching up on all the latest developments in the top races on the ballot, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what has happened in the primary races in the Democratic race for Senate? Were you surprised that over basically the last week, Lazary, Godlewski, Nelson, the number two through four candidates dropped out of the race? And how about the GOP primary for governor? The big endorsements from former President Trump, former Vice President Pence, not the same endorsees. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Anthony Chergosky is an assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. His specialties include American and Wisconsin political campaigns and elections, political communication, and mass media. Anthony, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me again, Rob.
Let's start with the Senate. You've got Democrats seeking to challenge incumbent Republican Ron Johnson in that race. Polling, we had four candidates showing up in the polls to varying degrees. Now three of them are out. What happened?
It was quite a week, Rob. As you said, flurry of activity is the right way to put it. You had Tom Nelson drop out earlier this week for practical reasons. He had simply put run out of money, and it takes a little bit of money to run a statewide campaign for United States Senate. So he dropped out of the race, but the pivotal aspect of that was his endorsement of Mandela Barnes. In many ways, that was the first domino to fall. The second domino was Alex Lazary, who it seems had to make some tough decisions going into this week of campaigning and the final stretch of campaigning. He was apparently presented with a scenario where he would have to go negative on Mandela Barnes if he were to make up ground in this primary election campaign. I suspect Alex Lazary is looking toward his political future, and it may not have earned him goodwill within the Democratic Party if he had gone negative and gone on the attack against Mandela Barnes. He opted to drop out instead. And that left Sarah Godlewski as the main contender in the race against Mandela Barnes, and there just really wasn't a viable path for her with support coalescing around Mandela Barnes, those key endorsements coming earlier in the week. I had been watching for Godlewski to potentially drop out. That is exactly what she did. And now, as you noted, Rob, we have essentially this race decided with Mandela Barnes being, for all intents and purposes, the assured Democratic nominee going into the November election against Ron Johnson.
Among those four, did you see strong, ideological differences or differences in, the sort of policies they'd focus on?
Not really, Rob. And that was the striking element of this campaign. There was not a lot of daylight between these four key contenders in terms of their policy views. There was also not any daylight between them in the key issue of reforming the Senate to get rid of the filibuster and get rid of that 60-vote threshold that most legislation in the Senate has to overcome to move forward. All of them were really on the same page on so many key issues. I think that made it difficult for the candidates to stand apart from one another. It's probably a big reason why the campaign remained so positive. There really weren't any negative attacks that went back and forth between the candidates, probably a product of the fact that in many ways they were on the same page on a lot of things.
People might look at that and say that's good for a candidate, that they didn't have a lot of damage, political damage coming out of a campaign. And yet I think there's a school of thought, Anthony, that says you want to get beat up a little bit in the primary. You want to be tested by the time you're against your main opponent in the general election. What do you think?
It's a fascinating question, Rob, and it's one that many political scientists have wondered about. On the one hand, you do want a tested candidate coming out of the primary election, a candidate who you know can handle the rigors of what is sure to be a highly negative and extraordinarily expensive general election campaign in this key election that could very well determine control of the United States Senate. On the other hand, a divided party coming out of a primary election is potentially problematic. So I think Democrats are probably coming out of this whole experience quite happy with what happened. Mandela Barnes had to run a difficult campaign. He had to run a campaign against some really talented and well-funded opponents. And he also avoided the negative attacks that may have been coming his way had Alex Lazary, Sarah Godlewski, or Tom Nelson opted for a different strategic path. I think Democrats are coming out of this quite pleased and quite optimistic about the course that this primary election took.
Talking to Anthony Chergosky, assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse, rounding up a lot of news in the run-up to the August 9th primary elections here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the Democratic primary field narrowing in the race for U.S. Senate to run against Senator Ron Johnson. Now we'll turn to the Republican campaign for governor to challenge Democratic incumbent Tony Evers. What do you think? What do you want to see happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. All right, we still have candidates in this race for the Republican nomination for governor. Rebecca Clayfish, a former lieutenant governor, Tim Michaels, a construction executive, Tim Ranthan running well behind them, legislator trying to overturn the 2020 election outcome, presidential election outcome in Wisconsin. Kevin Nicholson dropped out. Nobody else is dropping out there, Anthony.
No, that's right, Rob. And this has been quite a contrast to the Democratic Senate primary election, where you had a very positive campaign, not a lot of attacks going back and forth among the Democratic candidates for Senate. Boy, the intensity has really gone up a notch in the Republican race for governor. We've seen some attacks going back and forth between Rebecca Clayfish and Tim Michaels. Certainly, we've seen this proxy battle in the Republican Party between Donald Trump on the one hand, who has endorsed Tim Michaels, and Mike Pence on the other hand, who has gotten behind the candidacy of Rebecca Clayfish. So you've got fascinating internal struggles within the Republican Party playing out in this campaign. And you also have the attacks really ramping up between Clayfish and Michaels as Clayfish and her ally, Scott Walker, go on the attack against Tim Michaels over issues like right to work, the gas tax, and other matters that are hot button issues within the Republican Party.
Now, when all is said and done, does it really matter? Are Republicans will probably vote for whoever the nominee is against Tony Evers? Democrats are probably going to vote for whoever the nominee is against Ron Johnson. Do these battles really matter once we get into the general election?
Not really, Rob, because voters, as you noted, are so loyal to their political party nowadays. It might take a bit more healing on the Republican side after a hard-fought primary election for governor. There's really no healing to be done on the Democratic side because the major candidates in Nelson and Lazary and Godlewski have all pledged their full support behind Mandela Barnes. So the unification process on the Democratic side has already taken place and the primary election hasn't even happened yet. On the Republican side, though, there will have to be some unification, some healing, some coming together. At the end of the day, though, you are quite right. The Republican Party will be unified against Tony Evers, just as the Democratic Party will be unified against Ron Johnson. Voters are so loyal to their political party nowadays, and Rob, really motivated by opposition to the other side. And that is the ultimate unifying factor in politics. Republicans may have some hard feelings coming out of this nomination process, but they sure as heck can get unified in opposition to Tony Evers, just as Democrats might have had different preferences about their candidate for the United States Senate, but they can sure as heck get unified around their opposition to Ron Johnson.
We're talking to UW La Crosse political science professor Anthony Chergosky about the latest developments in the August 9th primary races in Wisconsin, looking mostly at governor and U.S. Senate. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you consider yourself a supporter of one party or the other, did it matter to you who the Democrats ended up nominating for Senate? Did it matter to you who Republicans end up nominating for governor? Or you just hoping for a strong candidate to beat the candidate on the other side that you don't like? If you consider yourself an independent, well, you're a rare breed these days, it seems like. But what do you think as you watch these primaries? What issues do you want to hear candidates for governor talking about, candidates for Senate talking about? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Anthony Chergosky, political science professor at UW La Crosse, with us today to check in on Wisconsin's statewide primary election races for governor, U.S. Senate, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Phone's pretty quiet here. Maybe people aren't that interested in the primaries. Maybe you are just worried about the general election in November. Not a big deal, the primaries, or do you have strong feelings about what's coming out of the Democratic race for Senate, the Republican race for governor? Do you have questions? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Anthony, we did hear from Larry in Janesville, who's concerned. He's worried that the National Democratic Party might have urged, say, Lasry and Godlewski to drop out of the race. Do you think that, the National Democrats would have an interest in doing that?
I think so, Rob. I think the National Democratic Party has every interest in pivoting to the general election. The race in Wisconsin is widely viewed as the Democrats' second best opportunity to flip a seat from red to blue, to gain a seat from the Republicans, with Pennsylvania being the best opportunity for Democrats to gain a seat. And there are just razor-thin majorities in the United States Senate, regardless of what happens in the midterm elections. Whichever party gains the majority in the Senate is going to have a razor-thin majority. So this thing is going to be a nail-biter. The Democrats are looking for any advantage they could potentially get in this Wisconsin race. And a great way to gain an advantage potentially is to pivot to the general election, move on beyond the nomination process, put their focus on defeating Ron Johnson. So I do think National Democrats, maybe they weren't pushing necessarily Godlewski and Lasry to get out of the race, but I'm sure National Democrats don't mind that this race is essentially resolved at this point and Mandela Barnes is almost certain to be the Democratic Party's nominee.
You mentioned razor thin. That is the kind of margin we sometimes have in Wisconsin elections. except for, a Tammy Baldwin kind of walking away with a race in her last election. We have some pretty tight races here. I mean, these I wouldn't bet a lot of money in any direction. Would you?
Oh, no, I sure wouldn't, Rob. The thing about Ron Johnson is he is uniquely polarizing, and that almost ensures a close election. Ron Johnson inspires the most intense supporters of almost any United States senator, just as he inspires the most intense opponents of almost any United States senator. Ron Johnson, he has, there's just such strong feelings in either direction surrounding Ron Johnson. That guarantees a close race. And I expect this to just go down to the wire. Ron Johnson might win by a point or two. He might lose by a point or two. But as you said, Rob, I'm not putting any money on this race. It could go either way.
Let's go to another caller now at 800-642-1234. Carolyn is with us in Menominee Falls. Carolyn, hi.
My reason for believing the primaries are important is having been gerrymandered in 2010 and experiencing the restrictions of voting just even during the primary, I'm concerned about the direction of the country. And I believe to only correct that at this time is we have to vote up and down Democrat. My own state assemblywoman will not return my call or respond to it. I think they're unresponsive because there's no moderation when we're voting. We've been restricted gerrymandered, so we have an extreme Republican group out there.
Carolyn, thanks for the call. And Carolyn pointing toward, Anthony, something we haven't focused on so far, the race for Assembly and Senate in Wisconsin. And she mentioned, the way the partisan lines, the political lines are drawn there, it is a very, very tall order for Democrats to win a majority in either chamber.
Yeah, Rob, that might be one of the areas where there's no drama in Wisconsin politics, especially in a year like 2022, where the broader political context favors the Republican Party. There is zero chance of the Democrats winning majorities in the state assembly or the state Senate. Heck, even in a really good year for the Democrats, it's almost inconceivable that they could win majorities in either chamber of the state legislature. So it's an interesting situation that we have in Wisconsin, if you will, where our statewide elections are nail biters. Our statewide elections are just constant sources of drama, and they gain nationwide attention for just how close and competitive they are. And then on the other hand, we have a state legislature where the Republicans are firmly entrenched in the majority.
And thanks for that call, Carolyn. Anthony, that kind of raises the stakes in some ways for the governor's race. Complete Republican control, very likely if they win the race for governor. And Democrats at least see a backstop if they can keep control of the governor's office to prevent the state legislature from doing a lot.
Absolutely. It's going to be really interesting to see if Tony Evers leans into that message in his campaign, where he basically may go to the voters and say, look, the Republicans are going to be the majority party in the state legislature. I, as governor, can block them from enacting certain laws that the people may not want. I'm a backstop. He has referred to himself as a goalie, I believe, at one point. And that might be a compelling message for voters who are looking for moderation, as the caller said, where we may not necessarily get moderation from individual legislators, but through the give and take of divided government, you might end up with something resembling moderation.
It's not so much give and take as not talking to each other at all, but
yes.
I guess it comes out the same. We're talking to Anthony Trigosky from UW La Crosse, political scientist there, looking at primary election season in Wisconsin. Want to go into your neck of the woods now, Anthony, and the congressional race in the district currently held by Ron Kind, a Democrat. He is retiring. This is, I think it's fair to say, the most potentially competitive race in Wisconsin, possible pickup, maybe likely pickup, depending on who you talk to, for Republicans. What are you seeing in that race right now?
Yeah, this is a race to watch for sure. Here in Western Wisconsin, the La Crosse, Eau Claire, Stevens Point area, Ron Kind, the longtime incumbent congressperson from this area, retiring. We have four Democrats in the field, very uncertain what the outcome of the Democratic primary here will be, in contrast to the Democratic primary for United States Senate. For sure, a highly competitive primary. So we're going to get a lot more clarity on this race out here in the 3rd Congressional District once the Democratic primary is over. But we do have clarity on the Republican side. Derek Van Orden is for sure going to be the Republican nominee. He is unopposed in the Democratic Party primary. He's gained a lot of attention for being in Washington, D.C. during the January 6th riots. He's been under fire for having using some campaign money to fund his trip to D.C. on January 6th. He brands himself as a staunch proponent of Trump and Trumpism. And so he's very much part of that wing of the party, very much an ally of Donald Trump. And national Republicans absolutely see this as a strong pickup opportunity. And Rob, that's because of the collapse of Democratic Party support in rural Wisconsin. The 3rd District out here in the West is quite rural. Ron Kind, the Democrat, had been able to hold his own in rural Wisconsin for quite a while, but it seems like those days might be over, where the Republicans out here in the West finally overcome those last holdouts, if you will, of rural areas, and really complete their dominance of rural Wisconsin through winning this district potentially in November and flipping a key House seat.
I want to hear your thoughts on messaging once we get past the primary and into the general election. Already seeing Republicans saying Mandela Barnes, trying to brand him as a radical member of the radical left. Democrats saying Republicans, this is a party where the leader tried to overturn the results of the election, still is doing that. Do you think there's going to be a lot of focus on trying to make the other party look like the extreme party?
That is exactly what is going to happen as this general election campaign plays out between Mandela Barnes, presumably, and Ron Johnson. The different sides are going to paint the other side as the extreme side, if that makes sense. Ron Johnson is going to paint Mandela Barnes as a person of the far left, an ally of the far left. The Democrats are going to paint Ron Johnson as someone who is out of touch and has really gone in line with the extreme elements of the Republican Party. It's basically a mirror image, these campaign strategies that we're going to see unfold. The question, Rob, is which side will be most successful at painting the other side as the extreme one?
I won't ask you to predict any winners, but I think one prediction you can make, there's going to be a lot of money spent here in Wisconsin over the next few months.
Oh my goodness, yes. It is going to be extraordinarily expensive. Ron Johnson is a fundraising machine for himself and for his opponents. And so that is for sure going to bring in a lot of money to Wisconsin. This is going to be an unbelievably expensive Senate race. And you can bet that the same will be true of the race for governor. This is a highly competitive race for governor, regardless of who the Republican nominee is. And so in these statewide elections, we're going to see a lot of money spent. We're also going to see a lot of money spent out here in Western Wisconsin, that key third congressional district that we've talked about, a very expensive race to come there. So the money is going to be pouring in here in Wisconsin, and hope we get used to those political ads, because we're going to be seeing plenty of them going forward.
Anthony, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Anthony Chergosky, assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse, looking at the statewide primary elections in Wisconsin. Some of the latest news, election day, August 9th. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, a new state Supreme Court ruling could have a big impact on voting for people with disabilities. A disability rights organization tells us what it means for Wisconsin voters. That's Monday here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we've got the wonder drug to change your life for the better. It's helping others. We'll talk to a doctor who says the data is rock solid. Serving other people is one of the best things you can do for your physical and mental health. I'm Rob Barrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Food Friday, let's have a picnic. A Wisconsin food blogger has advice and recipes, and you could share your outdoor dining favorites. First, what if I told you there was a pill that could boost your mental and physical health and actually add to your lifespan and your quality of life? No side effects, no copays. Sound pretty good? Okay, add this in. It's not a pill. The secret remedy is helping other people. Loved ones, total strangers, anybody in between. Our next guest says it works, and there's science to back it up. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you spend time helping others in one way or another? Maybe it's volunteering, caring for a loved one, whatever. Do you find that you feel in some way, shape, or form better when you do it? If you volunteer your time, do you like to come back for more? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Stephen Treziak is a physician scientist, chief of medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, and professor and chair of medicine at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University in Camden, New Jersey. He's co-author of the book Compassionomics, the Revolutionary Scientific Evidence That Caring Makes a Difference. He's co-author of the new book Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others Is the Best Medicine for Yourself. He's, by the way, from Madison, graduate of Madison West High School and UW-Madison Medical School. Dr. Treziak, welcome to the show and welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
You start your book with a conversation about, I think, the ways we try to find happiness and self-improvement in American culture, and whether that's, you know, trying to be successful at work or famous or physically fit or meditating in a yurt, whatever. They all look really different, but they all center around me. Why do you see that as a big problem?
Well, Rob, the evidence shows that, in contrast to what we're perhaps taught to believe, that if we're successful, then we'll be happy. The evidence actually points the other direction. If we're happy, then we'll be successful. And as it relates to our physical health, there is abundant scientific evidence. My colleague and co-author, Dr. Anthony Mazzarelli, and I curated 250 original science peer-reviewed research studies and synthesized them in our new book to show the evidence that serving others is the best medicine for yourself, not just your physical health, but also your mental health, your happiness and well-being, and as I mentioned, even your professional success. So what the science supports is that rather than going deeper into ourselves, which some of the self-help or the me time proponents suggest, really to get out of our own head and to focus on others and serve other people is the best way to achieve all these outcomes that we want for ourselves in terms of health and well-being.
Yeah, the most surprising thing for me was the physical health benefit. I like it kind of makes sense. Helping others might boost my mental health, might make me feel happy. Can you connect the dots? Serving others makes us just straight up physically healthier.
Totally. And connecting the dots is really important because I wouldn't want any of your listeners to think that I'm talking about some sort of magic trick. So there are scientific mechanisms behind serving others. Real quickly, I'll go through them. Number one is it activates the reward center of the brain, as shown on functional MRI brain scans. So as opposed to activating the pain center of your brain is when you see somebody struggling or suffering, and we all know experientially that's very difficult to watch. It actually activates the pain center of your brain. But when you take action to alleviate someone's pain or suffering, or you just do a kind act for another person, it triggers a distinct neural structure seen on these brain scans. It triggers a reward center. And that's part of the reason why, again, we know experientially, it feels good to help people. But there are other mechanisms. So we call them the Fantastic Four, and your listeners may be familiar with them. So endorphins and dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin, these hormones and neurotransmitters that are a big part of why it feels good to help people. But serving others also fine-tunes the nervous system. So as opposed to the fight or flight stress response that we may be used to, it pushes our nervous system to what's called the parasympathetic part of the nervous system, which is associated with calm and relaxation. Is essentially the chill part of the nervous system. And so it tips our nervous system in a more favorable direction. But the way all these things culminate is really twofold. Number one is it not only buffers our stress, so reduces the stress that we feel, not only in the moment, but it also, serving others also buffers the effect of chronic stress on health. And most of us are familiar with some data that stress, chronic stress, can have many health effects. Well, serving others actually buffers those risks. And lastly, chronic systemic inflammation in the body is something that's associated with all kinds of bad things like heart disease as well as cancer. And what research has shown is that serving others actually can switch off the genes in such a way to reduce the production of chronic systemic inflammation. So it's not a magic trick, as I said. There are actually bona fide, well-documented scientific mechanisms that are causing all the benefits for yourself that we talk about in Wonder Drug.
We're talking to Dr. Stephen Treziak, co-author of the new book, Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Seymour. Tom, hello.
I'm just wondering, I know a lot of addicts and alcoholics, and the ones that seem most comfortable with themselves and their sobriety are the ones that get outside themselves and help other people. Is that, have you looked at you know, service to others as a mechanism to help get away from these addictions?
Tom, thanks for that call. Dr. Treziak, Tom is right on target. You write specifically about that in the book.
Tom, it's a great question. And folks in the recovery community know about the importance of serving others. And one thing I have to say is that I am not an expert in addiction medicine, but as Rob mentioned, we do cover this to some extent in the book. And as as we understand the 12-step process, the first 11 steps are focused to some extent on ourselves, but the key 12th step is to look outside of ourselves and commit to helping another person struggling with the addiction. So again, I don't have training or background in addiction medicine specifically, but I do want to share that there is evidence that turning our attention light around from ourselves and our own problems, focusing it on someone else, that can be an important, crucial step in taking steps towards recovery. So thanks for the question, Tom.
Tom, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. You look a lot in the book at how to do this, how to get into helping other people. And I think a key point is it's not necessarily that productive to go all the way and stop caring about ourselves and devote our lives wholly to helping other people. It seems like that's not sustainable. What did you find?
So yes, we do write a 7-step evidence-based prescription, meaning lots of research studies to back up the different steps in the prescription. But underlying all that is exactly what you mentioned, is we have to recognize that research also shows that being self-focused and being other-focused are not two extremes on one single continuum. What researchers have shown is that there are actually two independent axes, meaning you can be high or low on both. So if you're high on self-interest and low on other interest, then we call that person an egomaniac. If you're low on other interest and on self-interest, then you're just apathetic and perhaps a slug of sorts. If you are high on other interest but low on other interest, you might let people walk all over you. And that's why Dr. Maz and I refer to those people as doormats. What's key and what we call a live to giver, and that's somebody who recognizes, and you may know people like this, Rob, in your life, that they know that serving other people is really what gives them their joy, their happiness, as well as a plethora of other effects. Those people are high on other interest, but they can also be high on self-interest in the way that they know it's good for them and it makes them happy. And that's okay. If you realize that, you realize there's evidence behind it. What the research shows is it actually doesn't ruin the effect, but what it does is it helps set some sort of boundaries. And that prevents people from becoming doormats and letting people walk all over them, because that's not sustainable. But being high in other interest and self-interest is what makes it sustainable, so that we can be the best live to giver that we can over a lifetime.
We're talking to Dr. Stephen Treziak, co-author of the new book, Wonder Drug 7, Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you, in some way, live to give? Do you like to help other people, serve other people, maybe volunteer your time, your talent? How do you feel when you do it? What questions do you have for our guest about how this affects our physical health, our emotional health, our happiness? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Dr. Stephen Treziak, Chief of Medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, co-author of the new book, Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you find happiness, maybe even healthiness, when you help other people in some way, big or small? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Carmen is with us in Twin Lakes. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. It is unbelievable to me that more people aren't willing to help other people. My situation was, since earlier middle grade school, helping my family and father in a small business, and that extended to aunts and uncles and cousins and relatives. And it seems so terrible when it's more people don't do it. And then after decades of helping, I think my sister has something like narcissistic personality disorder. She convinced my mother to change to Trush when my mother was, I don't know, 93 or something like that, and my sister put her in a home, even though my mother said, I want to die in my home. And my mother used to say to me, Carmen, how can I ever repay you for everything you've done for me and my family? I can't do it without, I got nothing. I'm okay. I got nothing financial. I got feelings. I know the difference between right and wrong.
Carmen, and I got you. Sorry, it took a bad twist for you there. But even with the bad scene there, Dr. Treziak, Carmen seems proud of the way he's helped people through the years.
Well, not only should Carmen be proud of that, but he should also realize that it might give him more of what we all want, which is time. Because this book is not a one, this book Wonder Drug, it's not a Pollyanna do-gooder book, it's a science book. And what the science supports is that on average, those people who help and serve others, not in a one and done sort of fashion, but consistently over time, they actually have greater longevity. It lowers more, it's independently associated with a lower mortality risk. And that's when you factor in all sorts of other things like socioeconomic status and comorbid health conditions, that giving and serving can be a powerful benefit for health and specifically longevity.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's get into the 7-part prescription here. And part one, it really is easy to start small. I think an average of, 16 minutes a day you talked about in the book?
So start small is one of the most important parts of the 7-part prescription because the barrier to entry is so small, but it's seismic. And so you don't have to have a total life upheaval to start serving others. You don't need to quit your job and sell all your worldly possessions and move to a third world country and start hauling water from a distant well. Now, on the contrary, what we need to do is not change our surroundings, but just change how we interact with our surroundings. So just simple prism changes where we see those people who are routinely in our orbit, the people under our own roof, or the people who we work with every day, those people that we can help and serve in some act of kindness, those are the little things that add up. And what the research supports is that it's just, on average, 16 minutes per day of service to others that will give us the benefits as it relates to longevity. So you may want to do it 16, we call it the daily 16, Dr. Maz and I. You may want to do it every day, or you may want to chunk it up and do it on a Saturday morning and serve 2 hours to help a sick friend or relative or serve a good cause or organization. But the research shows that you don't need a total life upheaval.
One thing I thought was interesting is you talk about effective ways to ask people if they need some kind of help. So we're in Wisconsin. If I say, how are you? You say, fine. If I say, do you need help? You say, nah, I'm good. I don't want to be a bother. What is a more effective way to suss out if somebody needs some kind of help, and if so, what?
It's a great question, Rob, and what research supports is that in everyday life, regular people have 9 opportunities for empathy every day. And I'm just a work in progress, and so that is very helpful to me because, you know, I think about how many opportunities for empathy did I miss even just this morning? And so looking for those opportunities is important rather than face buried in our phone and just in our own little world. We need to not only make eye contact with people, but we need to ask the right questions. So in contrast to the questions like, can I help you? Do you need any help? Which sort of invites a, no, I'm good. I'm fine. I don't need anything. Ask a question that can't be answered with a yes or a no. So for example, what can I do to make your day better today? Or what are the ways that I can be helpful to you today? In that case, you're likely to get something that you can act upon. And what the research supports is that it's not only good for the person that you're helping and serving, it's also good for you, and it'll make your own day better at the same time.
Talking to Dr. Stephen Treziak. He's a physician and a scientist, chief of medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, co-author of the book we're talking about, Wonder Drug, 7 scientifically proven ways that serving others is the best medicine for yourself. Dr. Treziak, do motives matter if I'm doing a good thing because I want people to see me doing a good thing? Does that work the same or different than if I'm doing it just to try to help people?
If you're doing it for strategic reasons, so in contrast to what Dr. Maz and I call a live to giver, instead, if you're a give to getter, meaning you're serving somebody because it's not only going to make you look good, but maybe in order to get something in return in like some sort of reciprocity, research shows quite clearly, you might as well forget it. It just doesn't work. So not only is it, does it not have the same links to the, to true, shall we say, altruistic motives. But what research shows in functional MRI brain scans, it actually activates a different part of your brain when you're serving others for strategic reasons or because somebody made you do it as some sort of an assignment versus doing it because you want to. And it's the doing it because you want to. Those are the types of serving others that will give you all the mechanisms that I talked about in the first segment, as well as all the outcomes that we've been talking about now, and not just longevity, but even things like lowering blood pressure over time.
Interesting thing, early in the book, you go back to Charles Darwin and ideas about evolution. And, you know, some people might think, oh, wait, the selflessness seems unnatural. We're evolved to take care of ourselves, right? Well, no, even Charles Darwin was saying, we help each other, and that's what we've evolved to do. This is part of our nature, this selflessness, this giving.
It is. Charles Darwin has been credited with a lot of things that he didn't do. One of them is coining the term survival of the fittest. It was actually a colleague of his that coined that term. But what Darwin did write is that the communities that help and serve each other, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but the communities that help and serve each other are those most likely to go on and to be preserved. And so in Darwin's writings, if you look at the detail, he clearly understood the importance of helping and serving and taking good care of each other because it was good for the species.
Can you talk about the notion of widening our orbit, was the word you used earlier. So right off the bat, we can put this into practice maybe with a spouse or a family member, but then maybe a friend and a coworker. How can we expand the circle of people we look to provide help for?
Well, one of the best ways, and this is tough right now because it seems, at least to me, that sometimes we're more divided than ever before. And if we have what some scientists call parochial empathy, meaning take care of our own, give and serve to our own, but not the other, meaning those people over there, you know, the quote unquote out group, as researchers study it, and only take care of our in group, that cuts us off to a ton of opportunities to help and serve other people. So what the research supports is that let's just be honest, if we held everybody up to some sort of purity test to only help and serve the people who believe exactly what we believe, we'd basically be able to help and serve nobody. and so what the science supports is that not only empathy matters, but reaching out and helping and serving people that maybe have different views than we do. And that is really where we're going to pick up a lot of the opportunities to expand that orbit, so to speak.
I want to close in just our last minute by touching on one more of your 7 points that we could put into practice pretty quickly, I think, being thankful. Can you leave us with a thought on that?
Sure. You've probably heard the evidence that an attitude of gratitude is good for you, but why? And that's what Dr. Maz and I wanted to dive into. And what we found is that in a meta-analytic study, meaning pushing all the evidence available everywhere in the scientific literature together, what the researchers found is that that attitude of gratitude and being thankful actually tips us over towards serving others and being focused on others rather than just being focused on ourselves. So really what the mechanism is that being thankful opens our mind to opportunities to help and serve other people. And then when we follow through on it, we can get all the benefits.
That's a great place to leave it, Dr. Treziak. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And I wish I could join your listeners on the Union Terrace tonight, but I'll have to do it some other time.
The weather's great, not to rub it in, but thanks again. That's Dr. Stephen Treziak, physician scientist, chief of medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, and professor and chair of medicine at Cooper Medical School at Rowan University. He's co-author of the book we've been talking about. It's called Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.